as if she could see Evangeline with Murtaugh and Wren. He knew even now part of her remained with the girl, just as part of Aelin remained with Rowan. He wondered if he'd ever feel it, that degree of love. For Aelin, yes, but it was a part of him, as his limbs were a part of him. It had never been a choice, as Lysandra's selflessness with that little girl had been, as Rowan and Aelin had chosen each other. Perhaps it was stupid to consider, given what he'd been trained to do and what awaited them in Morath, but he'd never tell her this in 1,000 years. But looking at Aelin and Rowan, he sometimes envied them. He didn't even want to think about what else Darrow had implied, that a union between Wendlin and Terrison had been attempted over 10 years ago, with marriage between him and Aelin the asking price, only to be rejected by their kin across the sea. He loved his cousin, but the thought of touching her like that made his stomach turn. He had a feeling she returned the sentiment. She hadn't shown him the letter she'd written to Wendlin. It hadn't occurred to him until now to ask to see it. Adian stared up at the lone figure before the vast, dark sea, and realized he didn't want to know. He was a general, a warrior honed by blood and rage and loss. He had seen and done things that still drew him from his sleep, night after night. But he did not want to know. Not yet. Lysandra said, "We should leave before dawn. I don't like the smell of this place." He inclined his head toward the 50 soldiers camped inside the temple walls.
"Obviously."
But before she could speak, blue flames sparked at Aelin's fingertips. The signal. Lysandra shifted into a ghost leopard, and Adian faded into the shadows as she loosed a roar that set the nearby homes tumbling awake. People spilled out of their doors just as the soldiers threw open the gates to the temple to see what the commotion was about. Aelin was off the roof in a few nimble maneuvers, landing with feline grace as the soldiers shoved into the street, weapons out and eyes wide. Those eyes grew wider as Lysandra slunk up beside Aelin, snarling, as Adian fell into step on her other side. Together they pulled off their hoods. Someone gasped behind them. Not at their golden hair, their faces, but at the hand wreathed in blue flame as Aelin lifted it above her head and said to the soldiers pointing crossbows at them, "Get the hell out of my temple." The soldiers blinked. One of the townsfolk behind them began weeping as a crown of fire appeared atop Aelin's hair, as the cloth smothering Goldrin burned away and the ruby glowed blood red. Adian smiled at the Otterlanian bastards, unhooked his shield from across his back, and said,
"My lady gives you a choice. Leave now, or never leave at all."
The soldiers exchanged glances. The flame around Aelin's head burned brighter, a beacon in the dark. Symbols have power indeed. There she was, crowned in flame, a bastion against the gathered night. So Adian drew the sword of Orinth from its sheath along his spine. Someone cried out at the sight of that ancient, mighty blade. More and more soldiers filled the open temple courtyard beyond the gate, and some dropped their weapons outright, lifting their hands, backing away.
"You bleeding cowards!"
a soldier snarled, shoving to the front. A commander, from the decorations on his red and gold uniform. Human. No black rings on any of them. His lip curled as he beheld Adian, the shield and sword he held angled and ready for bloodletting.
"The Wolf of the North."
The sneer deepened.
"And the fire-breathing bitch herself."
Aelin, to her credit, only looked bored. And she said one last time to the human soldiers gathered there, shifting on their feet, "Live or die. It's your choice, but make it now.
Don't listen to the bitch,
the commander snapped. Simple parlor tricks, Lord Mias said. But five more soldiers dropped their weapons and ran, outright sprinted into the streets. Anyone else? Aelin asked softly. 35 soldiers remained, weapons out, faces hard. Adian had fought against and alongside such men. Aelin looked to him in question. Adian nodded. The commander had his claws in them. They would only retreat when the man did.
Come on, then. Let's see what you have to offer, the commander taunted. I've got a lovely farmer's daughter I want to finish.
As if she were blowing out a candle, Aelin exhaled a breath toward the man. First, the commander went quiet, as if every thought, every feeling had halted. Then his body seemed to stiffen, like he'd been turned to stone. And for a heartbeat, Adian thought the man had been turned to stone, as his skin, his Otterlanian uniform, turned varying shades of gray. But as the sea breeze brushed past, and the man simply fell apart into nothing but ashes, Adian realized with no small amount of shock what she had done. She'd burned him alive, from the inside out. Someone screamed. Aelin merely said, I warned you. A few soldiers now bolted. But most held their ground, hate and disgust shining in their eyes at the magic, at his queen, at him. And Adian smiled like the wolf he was as he lifted the sword of Orinth and unleashed himself upon the line of soldiers raising weapons on the left, Lysandra lunging to the right with a guttural snarl, and Aelin rained down flames of gold and ruby upon the world. They took back the temple in 20 minutes. It was only 10 before they had control of it. The soldiers either dead or, if they'd surrendered, hauled to the town dungeon by the men and women who had joined the fight. The other 10 minutes were spent scouring the place for any ambushers. But they found only their trappings and refuse, and the site of the temple in such disrepair, the sacred walls carved with the names of Otterlanian brutes, the ancient urns of never-ending fire extinguished or used for chamber pots. Aelin had let them all see when she sent a raising fire through the place, gobbling up any trace of those soldiers, removing years of dirt and dust and gull droppings, to reveal the glorious ancient carvings beneath, etched into every pillar and step and wall. The temple complex comprised 3 buildings around a massive courtyard, the archives, the residence for the long-dead priestesses, and the temple proper, where the ancient rock was held. It was in the archives, the most defensible area by far, but she left Adian and Lysandra to find anything suitable for bedding, a wall of flame now encompassing the entire site. Adian's eyes still shone with the thrill of battle when she claimed she wanted a moment alone by the rock. He'd fought beautifully, and she'd made sure to leave some men alive for him to take down. She was not the only symbol here tonight, not the only one watched. And as for the shifter who had ripped into those soldiers with such feral savagery, Aelin left her again in falcon form, perched on a rotting beam in the cavernous archives, staring at the enormous rendering of a sea dragon carved into the floor, at last revealed by that raising fire. One of many similar carvings throughout, the heritage of a people long since exiled. From every space inside the temple, the crashing of waves on the shore far below whispered or roared. There was nothing to absorb the sound, to soften it. Great sprawling rooms and courtyards where there should have been altars and statues and gardens of reflection were wholly empty, the smoke of her fire still lingering. Good. Fire could destroy, but also cleanse. She crept across the darkened temple complex grounds, to where the innermost holiest of sanctuaries sprawled to the lip of the sea. Golden light leaked onto the rocky ground before the inner sanctum steps, light from the now eternally burning vats of flame to honor Brennan's gift. Still clothed in black, Aelin was little more than a shadow as she dimmed those fires to sleepy, murmuring embers and entered the heart of the temple. A great seawall had been built to push back the wrath of storms from the stone itself, but even then, the space was damp, the air thick with brine. Aelin cleared the massive antechamber and strode between the two fat pillars that framed the inner sanctuary. At its far end, open to the wrath of the sea beyond, arose the massive black rock. It was smooth as glass, no doubt from the reverent hands that had touched it over the millennia, and perhaps as big as a farmer's market wagon. It jutted upward, overhanging the sea, and starlight bounced off its pocked surface, as Aelin extinguished every flame but the sole white candle fluttering in the center of the rock. The temple carvings revealed no word marks or further messages from the little folk. Just swirls and stags. She'd have to do this the old-fashioned way, then. Aelin mounted the small stairs that allowed pilgrims to gaze upon the sacred rock, then stepped onto it. Chapter 15. The sea seemed to pause. Aelin tugged the word key from her jacket, letting it rest between her breasts, as she took a seat on the overhanging lip of the stone and peered out into the night-veiled sea, and waited. The sliver of crescent moon was beginning to descend, when a deep male voice said behind her, "You look younger than I thought." Aelin stared at the sea, even as her stomach tightened. But just as good-looking, right? She did not hear any footsteps, but the voice was definitely closer as he said, "At least my daughter was right about your humility." Funny, she never implied you had a sense of humor. A whisper of wind to her right, then long, muscled legs beneath ancient armor appeared beside hers, sandaled feet dangling into the surf. She finally dared to turn her head, finding that armor continued to a powerful male body and a broad-boned, handsome face. He might have fooled anyone into thinking he was flesh and blood, were it not for the pale glimmer of blue light along his edges. Aelin bowed her head slightly to Brennan. A half-smile was his only acknowledgment, his red-gold hair shifting in the moonlight. "A brutal but efficient battle," he said. She shrugged. "I was told to come to this temple. I found it occupied, so I unoccupied it. You're welcome." His lips twitched toward a smile.
"I cannot stay long."
"But you're gonna manage to cram in as many cryptic warnings as you can, right?" Brandon's brows rose, his brandy-colored eyes crinkling with amusement.
"I had my friends send you a message to come for a reason, you know."
"Oh, I'm sure of it." She wouldn't have risked reclaiming the temple otherwise. "But first, tell me about Maeve." She'd had enough of waiting until they dumped their message into her lap. She had her own goddamned questions.
Brennan's mouth tightened. "Specify what you need to know."
"Can she be killed?" The king's head whipped toward her.
"She is old, heir of Terrasen. She was old when I was a child. Her plans are far-reaching."
I know, but will she die if I shove a blade into her heart, cut off her head?" A pause.
"I don't know."
"What?" Brennan shook his head.
"I don't know. All Fae may be killed, Yet she has outlived even our extended lifespans, and her power. No one really understands her power.
But you journeyed with her to get the keys back.
I do not know. But she long feared my flame, and yours.
She's not Volg, is she?
A low laugh. No. As cold as one, but no.
Brannon's edges began to blur a bit. But he saw the question in her eyes, and nodded for her to go on. Aelin swallowed, her jaw clenching a bit as she forced out a breath. Does the power ever get easier to handle? Brannon's gaze softened a fraction.
Yes, and no. How it impacts your relationships with those around you becomes harder than managing the power, yet is tied to it as well. Magic is no easy gift in any form, yet fire. We burn not just within our magic, but also in our very souls, for better or worse.
His attention flicked to Goldrin, peeking over her shoulder, and he laughed in quiet surprise.
Is the beast in the cave dead?
No, but he told me that he misses you, and you should pay him a visit. He's lonely out there. Brannon chuckled again.
We would have had fun together, you and I.
I'm starting to wish they'd sent you to deal with me instead of your daughter. The sense of humor must skip a generation. Perhaps it was the wrong thing to say, for that sense of humor instantly faded from that beautiful tan face, those brandy eyes going cold and hard. Brannon gripped her hand, but his fingers went through hers, right down to the stone itself.
The lock, heir of Terrasen. I summoned you here for it. In the stone marshes there lies a sunken city. The lock is hidden there. It is needed to bind the keys back into the broken word gate. It is the only way to get them back into that gate and seal it permanently. My daughter begs you.
What lock?
Find the lock.
Where in the stone marshes? It's not exactly a small... Brannon was gone. Aelin scowled and shoved the amulet of Orinth back into her shirt. Of course there's a goddamned lock, she muttered. She groaned a bit as she eased to her feet and frowned at the night-dark sea crashing mere yards away, at the ancient queen across it, readying her armada. Aelin stuck out her tongue.
Well, if Maeve wasn't already poised to attack, that'll certainly set her off,
Adian drawled from the shadows of a nearby pillar. Aelin stiffened, hissing. Her cousin grinned at her, his teeth moon white.
You think I didn't know you had something else up your sleeve for why we took back this temple? Or that this spring in Rifthold taught me nothing about your tendency to be planning a few things at once?
She rolled her eyes, stepping off the sacred stone and stomping down the stairs. I assume you heard everything?
Brannon even winked at me before he vanished.
She clenched her jaw. Adian leaned his shoulder against the carved pillar.
A lock, eh? And when precisely were you going to inform us about this new shift in direction?
She stalked up to him. When I rutting felt like it, that's when. And it's not a shift in direction. Not yet. Allies remain our goal, not cryptic commands from dead royals. Adian just smiled. A ripple in the murky shadows of the temple snagged her attention. And Aelin heaved a sigh. You two are honestly insufferable. Lysandra flapped onto the top of a nearby statue and clicked her beak rather saucily. Adian slid an arm around Aelin's shoulders, guiding her back toward the ramshackle residence within the compound.
New court, new traditions, you said. Even for you.
Starting with fewer schemes and secrets that take years off my life every time you do a grand reveal. Though I certainly enjoyed that new trick with the ash. Very artistic. Aelin jabbed him in the side. Do not! The words halted, as footsteps crunched on the dry earth from the nearby courtyard. The wind drifted by, carrying a scent they knew too well. Vog. A powerful one, if he'd walked through her wall of flame. Aelin drew Goldrin as Adian's own blade whined softly, the sword of Orinth gleaming like freshly forged steel in the moonlight. Lysandra remained aloft, ducking deeper into the shadows.
Sold out, or shit poor luck,
Adian murmured. Likely both, Aelin muttered back, as the figure appeared through two pillars. He was stocky, slightly overweight. Not at all the impossible beauty that the Vog princes preferred when inhabiting a human body. But the inhuman reek, even with that collar on his wide neck. So much stronger than usual. Of course Brannan couldn't have been bothered to warn her. The Vog stepped into the light of the sacred braziers. The thoughts eddied from her head as she saw his face. And Aelin knew that Adian had been right. Her actions tonight had sent a message. An outright declaration of her location. Erewhon had been waiting for this meeting far longer than a few hours. And the Vog King knew both sides of her history. For it was the chief overseer of Endovir who now grinned at them. She still dreamt of him, of that ruddy, common face leering at her, at the other women in Endovir, of his laughter when she was stripped to the waist and whipped in the open, then left to hang from her shackles in the bitter cold or blazing sun, of his smile as she was shoved into those lightless pits, the grin still stretching wide when they removed her from them days or weeks later. Goldrin's hilt became slimy in her hand. Flame instantly burned along the fingers of her other. She cursed Lorkin for stealing back the golden ring, for taking away that one bit of immunity, of redemption. Adian was glancing between them, reading the recognition in her eyes. The overseer of Endovir sneered at her.
Are you going to introduce us, slave?
The utter stillness that crept over her cousin's face told her enough about what he'd pieced together, along with the glance at the faint scars on her wrists where shackles had been. Adian slid a step between them, no doubt reading every sound and shadow and scent to see if the man was alone, estimating how hard and long they'd have to fight their way out of here. Lysandra flapped to another pillar, poised to shift and pounce at a single word. Aelin tried to rally the swagger that had shielded and bluffed her way out of everything, but all she saw was the man dragging those women behind the buildings. All she heard was the slam of that iron grate over her lightless pit. All she smelled were the salt and the blood and the unwashed bodies. All she felt was the burning, wet slide of blood down her ravaged back. I will not be afraid. I will not be afraid.
Have they run out of pretty boys in the kingdoms for you to wear?
Adian drawled, buying them time to figure out the odds.
Come a bit closer, the overseer smirked, and we'll see if you make a better fit, General.
Adian let out a low chuckle, the sword of Orinth lifting a bit higher.
I don't think you'd walk away from it.
And it was the sight of that blade, her father's blade, the blade of her people. Aelin lifted her chin, and the flames encircling her left hand flickered brighter. The overseer's watery blue eyes slid to hers, narrowing with amusement.
Too bad you didn't have that little gift when I put you in those pits, or when I painted the earth with your blood.
A low snarl was Adian's answer. But Aelin made herself smile. It's late. I just trounced your soldiers. Let's get this chat out of the way so I can have some rest. The overseer's lip curled.
You'll learn proper manners soon enough, girl. All of you will.
The amulet between her breasts seemed to grumble, a flicker of raw ancient power. Aelin ignored it, shutting out any thought of it. If the Volg, if Erewhon got one whiff that she possessed what he so desperately sought. The overseer again opened his mouth. She attacked. Fire blasted him into the nearest wall, surging down his throat, through his ears, up his nose. Flame that did not burn, flame that was mere light, blindingly white. The overseer roared, thrashing as her magic swept into him, melded with him. But there was nothing inside to grab onto. No darkness to burn out. No remaining ember to breathe life into. Only. Aelin reeled back, magic vanishing and knees buckling as if struck. Her head gave a throb, and nausea roiled in her gut. She knew that feeling. That taste. Iron. As if the man's core was made of it, and that oily, hideous aftertaste. Wordstone. The demon inside the overseer let out a choked laugh.
What are collars and rings compared to a solid heart? A heart of iron and wordstone, to replace the coward's heart beating within.
Why? She breathed.
I was planted here. To demonstrate what is waiting should you and your court visit Morath.
Aelin slammed her fire into him, scouring his insides, striking that core of pure darkness inside, again, again, again. The overseer kept roaring, but Aelin kept attacking until she vomited all over the stones between them. Adian hauled her upright. Aelin lifted her head. She'd burned off his clothes, but not touched the skin. And there, pulsing against his ribs as if it were a fist punching through, was his heart. It slammed into his skin, stretching bone and flesh. Aelin flinched back. Adian threw a hand in her path as the overseer arched in agony, his mouth open in a silent scream. Lysandra flapped down from the rafters, shifting into leopard form at their side and snarling. Again, that fist struck from inside. And then bones snapped, punching outward, ripping through muscle and skin as if his chest cavity were the petals of a blooming flower. There was nothing inside. No blood. No organs. Only a mighty, ageless darkness. And two flickering golden embers at its core. Not embers. Eyes. Simmering with ancient malice. They narrowed in acknowledgement and pleasure. It took every ounce of her fire to steel her spine, to tilt her head at a jaunty angle, and drawl, "At least you know how to make a good entrance, Erewhon." Chapter 16. The overseer spoke, but the voice was not his. And the voice was not Parrington's. It was a new voice, an old voice, a voice from a different world and lifetime, a voice that fed on screams and blood and pain. Her magic thrashed against the sound, and even Adian swore softly, still trying to herd her behind him. But Aelin stood fast against the darkness, peering at them from the man's cracked chest, and she knew that even if his body hadn't been irreparably broken, there was nothing left inside him to save anyway. Nothing worth saving to begin with. She flexed her fingers at her sides, rallying her magic against the darkness that coiled and swirled inside the man's shattered chest. Erewhon said,
"I would think gratitude is in order, heir of Brannan."
She flicked her brows up, tasting smoke in her mouth. "Easy," she murmured to her magic. Careful. She'd have to be so careful he did not see the amulet around her neck, sense the presence of the final word key inside. With the first two already in his possession, if Erewhon suspected that the third key was in this temple, and that his utter dominance over this land and all others was close enough to grab, she had to keep him distracted. So Aelin snorted. Why should I thank you, exactly? The embers of his eyes slid upward, as if surveying the hollow body of the overseer.
For this small warning present. For ridding the world of one more bit of vermin. And for making you realize how fruitless standing against me will be.
That voice whispered right into her skull. She slammed fire outward in a blind maneuver, stumbling back into Adian at the caress in that hideous, beautiful voice. From her cousin's pale face, she knew he'd heard it too, felt its violating touch.
Erewhon chuckled. I'm surprised you tried to save him first, given what he did to you at Endovir. My prince could scarcely stand to be inside his mind, it was already so vile. Do you find pleasure in deciding who shall be saved and who is beyond it? So easy to become a little burning god.
Nausea, true and cold, struck her. But it was Adian who smirked.
I'd think you'd have better things to do, Erewhon, than taunt us in the dead hours of the morning. Or is this all just a way to make yourself feel better about Dorian Havilyard slipping through your nets?
The darkness hissed. Adian squeezed her shoulder in silent warning. End it now, before Erewhon might strike, before he could sense that the word key he sought was mere feet away. So Aelin inclined her head to the force staring at them through flesh and bone. I suggest you rest and gather your strength, Erewhon, she purred, winking at him with every shred of bravado left in her. You're going to need it. A low laugh, as flames started to flicker in her eyes, heating her blood with welcome, delicious warmth.
Indeed. Especially considering the plans I have for the would-be King of Otterlin.
Aelin's heart stopped.
Perhaps you should have told your lover to disguise himself before he snatched Dorian Havilyard out of Rifthold.
Those eyes narrowed to slits.
What was his name? Oh, yes.
Erewhon breathed, as if someone had whispered it to him.
Prince Rowan Whitethorn of Doranel. What a prize he shall be.
Aelin plummeted down into fire and darkness, refusing to yield one inch to the terror creeping over her.
Erewhon crooned, My hunters are already tracking them, and I am going to hurt them, Aelin Galathinius. I am going to hone them into my most loyal generals, starting with your Fey Prince.
A battering ram of hottest blue slammed into that pit in the man's chest cavity, into those burning eyes. Aelin kept her magic focused on that chest, on the bones and flesh melting away, leaving only that heart of iron and wordstone untouched. Her magic flowed around it like a stream surging past a rock, burning his body, that thing inside him.
Don't bother saving any part of him,
Adian snarled softly. Her magic roaring out of her, Aelin glanced over a shoulder. Lysandra was now in human form beside Adian, teeth gritted at the overseer. The look cost her. She heard Adian's shout before she felt Erewhon's punch of darkness crash into her chest. Felt the air snap against her as she was hurled back. Felt her body bark against the stone wall before the agony of that darkness really sank in. Her breath stalled. Her blood halted.
Get up, get up, get up!
Erewhon laughed softly, as Adian was instantly at her side, dragging her to her feet, as her mind, her body, tried to reorder itself. Aelin threw out her power again, letting Adian believe she allowed him to hold her upright simply because she forgot to step away. Not because her knees were shaking so violently she wasn't sure she could stand. But her hand remained steady, at least, as she extended it. The temple around them shuddered at the force of the power she hurled out of herself. Dust and kernels of debris trickled from the ceiling high above. Columns swayed like drunken friends. Adian's and Lysandra's faces glowed in the blue light of her flame, their features wide-eyed, but set with solid determination and wrath. She leaned farther into Adian as her magic roared from her, his grip tightening at her waist. Each heartbeat was a lifetime. Each breath ached. But the Overseer's body at last ripped apart under her power, the dark shields around it yielding to her. And some small part of her realized that it only did so when Erewhon deigned to leave, those amused ember-like eyes guttering into nothing. When the man's body was only ashes, Aelin reeled back her magic, cocooned her heart in it. She gripped Adian's arm, trying not to breathe too loudly, lest he hear the rasp of her battered lungs, realize how hard that single plume of darkness had hit. A heavy thud echoed through the silent temple, as the lump of iron and wordstone fell. That was the cost, Erewhon's plan, to realize that the only mercy she might offer her court would be death. If they were ever captured, he'd make her watch as they were all carved apart and filled with his power, make her look into their faces when he'd finished, and find no trace of their souls within. Then he'd get to work on her. And Rowan and Dorian. If Erewhon was hunting them at this very moment, if he learned that they were in Skull's Bay, and how hard he'd actually struck her. Aelin's flames banked to a quiet ember, and she finally found enough strength in her legs to push away from Adian's grip. "We need to be on that ship before dawn, Aelin," he said. "If Erewhon wasn't bluffing..." Aelin only nodded. They had to get to Skull's Bay as fast as the winds and currents could carry them. But as she turned toward the archway out of the temple, heading for the archives, she glanced at her chest. Utterly untouched, though Erewhon's power had hit her like a hurled spear. He'd missed. By 3 inches, Erewhon had narrowly missed hitting the amulet, and possibly sensing the word key inside it. Yet the blow still reverberated against her bones in brutal ripples. A reminder that she might be the heir of fire, but Erewhon was king of the darkness. Chapter 17 Manon Blackbeak watched the black skies above Morath bleed to rotted gray on the last morning of Astarin's life. She had not slept the entirety of the night, had not eaten or drank, had done nothing but sharpen Windcleaver in the frigid openness of the Wyvern's Eyrie. Over and over, she had honed the blade, leaning against Abraxos's warm side, until her fingers were too stiff with cold to grip sword or stone. Her grandmother had ordered Astarin locked in the deepest bowels of the keep's dungeon, so heavily guarded that escape was impossible, or rescue. Manon had toyed with the idea for the first few hours after the sentence had been given. But to rescue Astarin would be to betray her matron, her clan. Her mistake. It was her own mistake, her own damned choices that had led to this. And if she stepped out of line again, the rest of the 13 would be put down. She was lucky she hadn't been stripped of her title as wingleader. At least she could still lead her people, protect them. Better than allowing someone like Iskra to take command. The Farian Gap's Legion's assault on Rifthold under Iskra's command had been sloppy, chaotic, not the systematic, careful sacking Manon would have planned had they asked her. It made no difference now whether the city was in full or half ruin. It didn't alter Astarin's fate. So there was little to be done, other than to sharpen her ancient blade and memorize the words of request. Manon would have to utter them at the right moment. This last gift she could give her cousin. Her only gift. Not the long, slow torture and beheading that was typical of a witch execution, but the swift mercy of Manon's own blade. Boots scuffed on stone and crunched the hay littering the airy floor. Manon knew that step, knew it as well as Astarin's own gait.
What?
She said to Sorrel without looking behind her.
Dawn approaches, her third said. Soon to be second.
Vesta would become third, and maybe Astarin would at last see that hunter of hers, see the stillborn witchling they'd had together. Never again would Astarin ride the winds. Never again would Astarin soar on the back of her sky-blue mare. Manon's eyes slid to the wyvern across the aerie, shifting on her two legs, awake when the others were not, as if she could sense her mistress's doom beckoning with each passing moment. What would become of the mare when Astarin was gone? Manon rose to her feet, Abraxos nudging the backs of her thighs with his snout. She reached down, brushing his scaly head. She didn't know who it was meant to comfort. Her crimson cape, as bloody and filthy as the rest of her, was still clasped at her collarbone. The 13 would become 12. Manon met Sorrel's gaze, but her third's attention was on Windcleaver, bare in Manon's hand. Her third said,
"You mean to make the words of request?"
Manon tried to speak, but she could not open her mouth, so she only nodded. Sorrel stared toward the open archway beyond Abraxos.
"I wish she had the chance to see the wastes. Just once."
Manon forced herself to lift her chin.
"We do not wish. We do not hope,"
she said to her soon-to-be second. Sorrel's eyes snapped to her, something like hurt flashing there. Manon took the inner blow. She said,
"We will move on. Adapt."
Sorrel said quietly, but not weakly,
"She goes to her death to keep your secrets."
It was the closest Sorrel had ever come to outright challenge, to resentment. Manon sheathed Windcleaver at her side and strode for the stairwell, unable to meet Abraxos's curious stare.
"Then she will have served me well as second, and will be remembered for it."
Sorrel said nothing. So Manon descended into the gloom of Morath to kill her cousin. The execution was not to be held in the dungeon. Rather, her grandmother had selected a broad veranda overlooking one of the endless drops into the ravine curled around Morath. Witches were crowded onto the balcony, practically thrumming with bloodlust. The matrons stood before the gathered group, Cressida and the Yellowlegs matron flanked by each of their heirs, all facing the open doors through which Manon and the 13 exited the keep proper. Manon did not hear the murmur of the crowd, did not hear the roaring wind ripping between the high turrets, did not hear the strike of hammers in the forges of the valley below. Not when her attention went to Astarin, on her knees before the matrons. She, too, was facing Manon, still in her riding leathers, her golden hair limp and knotted, flecked with blood.
She lifted her face.
It was only fair, Manon's grandmother drawled, the crowd silencing, for Iskra Yellowlegs to also avenge the four sentinels slaughtered on your watch. 3 blows apiece for each of the sentinels killed.
12 blows total. But from the cuts and bruises on Asterin's face, the split lip, from the way she cradled her body as she bent over her knees, it had been far more than that. Slowly, Manon looked at Iskra. Cuts marred her knuckles, still raw from the beating she'd given Asterin in the dungeon. While Manon had been upstairs brooding. Manon opened her mouth, her rage a living thing thrashing in her gut, her blood. But Asterin spoke instead.
Be glad to know, Manon,
her second rasped with a faint, cocky smile,
that she had to chain me up to beat me.
Iskra's eyes flashed.
You still screamed, bitch, when I whipped you.
Enough, Manon's grandmother cut in, waving a hand. Manon barely heard the order. They had whipped her sentinel like some underling, like some mortal beast. Someone snarled low and vicious to her right. The breath went out of her, as she found Sorrel, unmovable rock, unfeeling stone, baring her teeth at Iskra, at those assembled here. Manon's grandmother stepped forward, brimming with displeasure. Behind Manon, the 13 were a silent, unbreakable wall. Asterin began scanning their faces, and Manon realized her second understood that it was the last time she'd do so.
Blood shall be paid with blood, Manon's grandmother and the Yellowlegs matron said in unison, reciting from their eldest rituals. Manon steeled her spine, waiting for the right moment.
Any witch who wishes to extract blood in the name of Zelta Yellowlegs may come forward.
Iron nails slid out from the hands of the entire Yellowlegs coven. Asterin only stared at the 13, her bloody face unmoved, eyes clear.
The Yellowlegs matron said, Form the line.
Manon pounced.
I invoke the right of execution.
Everyone froze. Manon's grandmother's face went pale with rage, but the other two matrons, even Yellowlegs, just waited.
Manon said, head high, I claim the right to my second's head. Blood shall be paid with blood, but at my sword's edge. She is mine, and so shall her death be mine.
For the first time, Asterin's mouth tightened, eyes gleaming. Yes, she understood the only gift Manon could give her, the only honor left.
It was Cressida Blueblood who cut in before the other two matrons could speak.
For saving my daughter's life, Wingleader, it shall be granted.
The Yellowlegs matron whipped her head to Cressida, a retort on her lips. But it was too late. The words had been spoken, and the rules were to be obeyed at any cost. The Kraken's red cape fluttering behind her in the wind, Manon dared a look at her grandmother. Only hatred glowed in those ancient eyes. Hatred, and a flicker of satisfaction that Asterin would be ended after decades of being deemed an unfit second. But at least this death was now hers to give. And in the east, slipping over the mountains like molten gold, the sun began to rise. 100 years she'd had with Asterin. She'd always thought they'd have 100 more. Manon said softly to Sorrel, Turn her around. My second shall see the dawn one last time. Sorrel obediently stepped forward, pivoting Asterin to face the high witches, the crowd by the rail, and the rare sunrise piercing through Morath's gloom. Blood soaked through the back of her second's leathers,
and yet Astarin knelt, shoulders square and head high, as she looked not at the dawn, but at Manon herself, while she stopped around her second to take a place a few feet before the matrons.
"Sometime before breakfast, Manon," her grandmother said from a few feet behind.
Manon drew Windcleaver, the blade singing softly as it slid free of its sheath. The sunlight gilded the balcony, as Astarin whispered, so softly that only Manon could hear.
"Bring my body back to the cabin."
Something in Manon's chest broke. Broke so violently that she wondered if it was possible for no one to have heard it. Manon lifted her sword. All it would take was one word from Astarin, and she could save her own hide. Spill Manon's secrets, her betrayals, and she'd walk free. Yet her second uttered no other word. And Manon understood in that moment that there were forces greater than obedience and discipline and brutality. Understood that she had not been born soulless. She had not been born without a heart. For there were both, begging her not to swing that blade. Manon looked to the 13, standing around Astarin in a half-circle. One by one, they lifted two fingers to their brows. A murmur went through the crowd. The gesture not to honor a high witch, but a witch queen. There had not been a queen of witches in 500 years, either among the Krokins or the Iron Teeth. Not one. Forgiveness shone in the faces of her 13. Forgiveness and understanding and loyalty that was not blind obedience, but forged in pain and battle, in shared victory and defeat. Forged in hope for a better life, a better world. At last, Manon found Astarin's gaze, tears now rolling down her second's face. Not from fear or pain, but in farewell. 100 years, and yet Manon wished she'd had more time. For a heartbeat, she thought of that sky-blue mare in the Aerie, the wyvern that would wait and wait for a rider who would never return. Thought of a green, rocky land spreading to the western sea. Hand trembling, Astarin pressed her fingers to her brow and extended them.
"Bring our people home, Manon," she breathed.
Manon angled Windcleaver, readying for the strike. The Blackbeak matron snapped,
"Be done with it, Manon!"
Manon met Sorrel's eyes, then Astarin's. And Manon gave the 13 her final order.
"Run."
Then Manon Blackbeak whirled and brought Windcleaver down upon her grandmother. Chapter 18 Manon saw only the flash of her grandmother's rusted iron teeth, the glimmer of her iron nails, as she raised them to ward against the sword, but too late. Manon slashed Windcleaver down, a blow that would have cut most men in half. Yet her grandmother darted back fast enough that the sword sliced down her torso, ripping fabric and skin as it cut between her breasts in a shallow line. Blue blood sprayed, but the matron was moving, blocking Manon's next blow with her iron nails. Iron so hard that Windcleaver bounced off. Manon did not look to see if the 13 obeyed, but Astarin was roaring, roaring and shouting to stop. The cries grew more distant, then echoed, as if she were now inside the hall being dragged away. No sounds of pursuit, as if the onlookers were too stunned. Good. Iskra and Petra had swords out, iron teeth down as they stepped between their matrons and Manon, herding their two high witches away. The Blackbeak matron's coven lunged forward, only to be halted by a hand.
"Stay back,"
her grandmother commanded, panting as Manon circled her. Blue blood leaked down her grandmother's front. An inch closer, and she'd have been dead.
Dead.
Her grandmother bared her rusted teeth.
She's mine.
She jerked her chin at Manon. We do this the ancient way. Manon's stomach roiled, but she sheathed her sword. A flick of her wrists had her nails out, and a snap of her jaw had her teeth descending. Let's see how good you are, wing leader, her grandmother hissed, and attacked. Manon had never seen her grandmother fight, never trained with her. And some small part of Manon wondered if it was because her grandmother did not want others to know how skilled she was. Manon could hardly move fast enough to avoid the nails ripping into her face, her neck, her gut, yielding step after step after step. She only had to do this long enough to buy the 13 time to get to the skies. Her grandmother slashed for her cheek, and Manon blocked the blow with an elbow, slamming the joint down hard into her grandmother's forearm. The witch barked in pain, and Manon spun out of reach, circling again. It is not so easy to strike now, is it, Manon Blackbeak? Her grandmother panted as they surveyed each other. No one around them dared move. The 13 had vanished, every last one of them. She almost sagged with relief. Now, to keep her grandmother occupied long enough to avoid her giving the onlookers the order to pursue. So much easier with a blade. The weapon of those cowardly humans. Her grandmother seethed. With the teeth, the nails. You have to mean it. They lunged for each other, some fundamental part of her cracking with every slash and swipe and block. They darted apart again. As pathetic as your mother, her grandmother spat. Perhaps you'll die like her, too, with my teeth at your throat. Her mother, whom she'd killed coming out of, who had died birthing her. For years I tried to train her weakness out of you. Her grandmother spat blue blood onto the stones. For the good of the iron teeth. I made you into a force of nature, a warrior equal to none. And this is how you repay me. Manon didn't let the words unnerve her. She went for the throat, only to faint and slash. Her grandmother barked in pain, genuine pain, as Manon's claws shredded her shoulder. Blood showered her hand, flesh clinging to her nails. Manon staggered back, bile burning her throat. She saw the blow coming, but still didn't have time to stop it as her grandmother's right hand slashed across her belly. Leather, cloth, and skin ripped. Manon screamed. Blood, hot and blue, rushed out of her before her grandmother had darted back. Manon shoved a hand against her abdomen, pushing against the shredded skin. Blood dribbled through her fingers, splattering onto the stones. High above, a wyvern roared. Abraxos. The Blackbeak matron laughed, flicking Manon's blood off her nails. I'm going to dice your wyvern into tiny pieces and feed him to the hounds. Despite the agony in her belly, Manon's vision honed. Not if I kill you first. Her grandmother chuckled, still circling, assessing. You are stripped of your title as wing leader. You are stripped of your title as heir. Step after step, closer and closer, an adder looping around its prey. From this day, you are Manon Witch Killer, Manon Kinslayer. The words pelted her like stones. Manon backed toward the balcony rail, pushing against the wound in her stomach to keep the blood in. The crowd parted like water around them. Just a little longer. Just another minute or two. Her grandmother paused, blinking toward the open doors, as if realizing the 13 had vanished. Manon attacked again before she could give the order to pursue. Swipe, lunge, slash, duck. They moved in a whirlwind of iron and blood and leather. But as Manon twisted away, the wounds in her stomach